few media notes this week. Mel Gibson's new film, The Passion, is about to open. I don't know if I should see it. I don't want to support a film that's been called anti-Semitic with what it now costs for two adults to see a movie and buy supersized popcorn and Diet Coke, though from what I read about the film's graphic violence, a Tums and a tourniquet might be more useful. But should I refuse to see a film because it's anti-Semitic when I haven't actually seen it to judge that for myself? The producer of our program was musing at our conference table the other day and asked, "You going to see Mel Brooks's film about Jesus?" We laughed when we realized he had his Mels mixed, Brooks instead of Gibson. Then we thought, a Mel Brooks film about Jesus? I'd see that movie in a New York second. In other news, New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof is drawing some criticism for crossing an ethical line in columns he wrote about two young Cambodian girls, Sreneth and Sremom, whose family sold them into sex slavery. And Mr. Kristof realized that he could buy the two girls outright for a total of $353. He put down his money and took the girls back to their home villages. Mr. Kristof has been criticized in some quarters for crossing journalism's ethical line from observer to participant. He's also been criticized for doing business with a slave trader, however good-hearted his purpose. I wonder how Mr. Kristof would have been assailed if he had drawn the vivid story of their dangerous lives from out of the souls of those two girls, and then just walked away, saying, "Hope you like your pictures on our website." He had a clear chance to save two lives right in front of him for $353. He didn't paralyze his conscience with ethical concerns. I find this a better quality not only in a human being, but in a journalist. He can tell the difference between what's real and what isn't, which should be part of every reporter's kit. I would rather have an ethical problem on my conscience than two young lives. And finally, the HBO series Sex and the City comes to an end Sunday night. I was ready for it to end last season. I thought Carrie, Miranda, Samantha, and Charlotte were getting a little too old to be having the same girlish chinwags about naughty men and wicked shoes in increasingly posh restaurants. But this season has taken some more intriguing turns into the anxieties of mortality, fertility, isolation, self-loathing, and loneliness. The show uses sex as a come-on, but maybe it's always been about four women who find their love for New York and for each other more compelling than most any man they have ever spent a night with.